and welcome to the In the Now. JP, Dimitri.
How's it going, everybody?
VR.
Hola.
All right. Got another show coming at you. Another Friday of the month. A lot of things have been going on, a lot of things to talk about. Let's start off. The next Phoenix Linux user group is May 29th. That's a Tuesday. They're from 7 to 9:30 p.m. You can go to plug.phoenix.az.us to find out all the information of where the directions are. Any you guys see anything interesting in the news lately?
Elevators to space.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I sent that to you guys. But what do you guys think about that, actually? We'll talk about that really quick while we're getting some things organized here. I don't think it's going to happen, but NASA was talking about some technology that would be pretty cheap to make an elevator to go to space.
I don't know. It could happen. It's not a matter of just a matter of if they're actually going to do it, if there's any reason to do it. I mean, if they said it'd be cheaper transportation, if people are actually going back and forth to the space station, if it's still around then, and if it's useful for some purposes.
You know, the idea that I heard to actually start launching spaceships into the skies, instead of using rockets and actual motors, what they would use is kind of like with those roller coasters that are based off of magnets, and it's a three-mile-long track, and what they do is use these magnets to jet you and do 300 miles per hour within 6 seconds and just shoot you in space. And then from there, you'd actually use the rockets to propel yourself around, which would save all the extra fuel just to get into the out of the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah, if it's anything like the Superman ride at Magic Mountain, which runs off magnets, then it'll be pretty dang cool.
That was a really good ride. I did do that a couple months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Instantaneous acceleration, baby.
All right. Well, we're going to head into some stories. Here's some interesting stories. This actually happened a little bit earlier in the month. This is May 11th. I'm just going to read you straight from the article. This is about Chinese hackers who were trying to hack the United States for that week of May 1st through the 7th. Federal authorities and security companies are warning American businesses to protect themselves next week during a planned Labor Day strike from Chinese hackers upset from the present spy plane incident. The National Infrastructure Protection Center, the FBI's cybercrime arm, said Thursday that Chinese hackers have publicly discussed increasing their activity from April 30th to May 7th. Those days coincide with two major Chinese holidays, International Workers' Day and Youth Day. May 7th also is the two-year anniversary of the bombing of Chinese embassy in Belgrade, Yugoslavia?
Belgrade.
American hackers have vandalized scores of Chinese websites, frequently adding obscene or racist anti-Chinese screeds. Next week's attack will be a retaliation, according to U.S. security firms. There's no evidence that these attacks were sanctioned by the Chinese government. About 65 Chinese websites have been vandalized by American hackers since the U.S. reconnaissance plane crash landed in China, according to the website attrition.org, which monitors website defacements. Just something to add to that. Actually, when they got the pilots back, the Americans, our government, showed a tape of Wang Wei flying next to one of our previous spy planes, or I don't know what plane it was, and he was within 3 feet of that plane, just playing around, trying to, you know, mess with the pilot, the American pilot. He was within 3 feet, and what's supposed to be is you're supposed to be at a maximum of 50, or a minimum of 50 feet away from the planes. And it showed when Wang Wei hit the plane, from what the American pilots had said, is that the rudder actually got too close to their propellers because they weren't jet-propelled, they were propeller-propelled, and that back rudder actually hit their propeller because he was too close to the plane, and that's what made him crash.
Well, why do you think they called him Wang Wei?
Yeah, because he was calling him Wang Wei.
That's right.
All right, well, it's a few weeks later now. I personally wasn't severely harmed by any massive Chinese front of hackers destroying my website. I don't know about anybody else here, but
actually, they did deface a couple American sites, and I had read in another article they kind of actually had really bad English. They had really good computer skills, but they had really bad English because they said that Americans must promise for Chinese incident or something like that. They had a lot of bad English, I read, of some of the defacements that they had.
Are you sure George W. Bush didn't hack that website?
Yeah,
that could be actually evidence to support that he did.
Yeah. There was another incident a couple of weeks ago. A group hacked whitehouse.gov. Yeah, not whitehouse.org. Or .com.
.com is a porn site.
Yes. White House, and it was a denial of service attack, which the site was down for a couple of hours, I guess. And I was thinking, okay, I can understand doing a denial of service for a commercial website like eBay because they lose money. But so what if the White House site is down for a couple of hours? Like, it's not going to hurt them in any meaningful way. What was the point of that?
Just see if you can do it.
Yeah, make a statement, I guess.
There's a little tidbit of news. Actually, this news comes from today. 2600.com hijacked from NSI Foulup. We don't know the details yet, but our domain apparently expired without any notification, paper, or electronic mail being sent to us. Control current hoist information lists the owner of the domain. 2600.com is a publication of a hacker quarterly magazine. They also are in relation with Emmanuel Goldstein, which also does a radio show off the hook. Let's see.
What? So somebody else jacked their domain name?
No, what had happened was that Network Solutions had actually tried to look up their hoist information, who actually owned the domain, and they couldn't even find 2600 Productions or whatever the company's name. They didn't find them actually in there in the first place, and they had some problems with their database where the information wasn't up to date, and nobody had noticed them, gave them a notice that their year registration was up, and then somebody else had bought it. And I know that they have those things where once the domain is up, Dimitri over here was trying to get a domain the other day, and once the domain was up, like an Autobot came and bought it.
Yeah.
Or somebody was sitting there right there.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting for that domain to come up.
I can't remember the name of. There's two companies. One really just sucks, and the other one's supposed to be really good, but there's people you actually pay, and they have some script running that just will get it right away. There's no possible way any one of us could beat that thing.
So that news came from today, and actually about 3 hours later they sent out another piece of news that said that they had gotten their domain back and thought the information would be corrected. So
it's funny. What was up there for the few hours that it was down?
Oh, no. It was their page still up. Mm-hmm. I don't know actually if their page was down, because actually that would change their IP addresses. I don't know if their page was down. But you can also reach them at 2600.org and 2600.net.
And they've been having all sorts of problems lately, well, with the linking to the DVD decoders and all that. What is it, DCSS?
DCSS. Actually, this is something that would be too long to explain, but if you go to 2600.com's website, they'd be able to explain it a lot better there. The DCSS, there was a piece of... Actually, it was a program that was created that would actually decrypt a DVD. I actually have this program, and I haven't really gotten it to work. But I actually met the kid that made it. He was, I think he was 16 or 15, and I forget actually what... It's been such a while. He's from another country, and the program got ported over here, and 2600 read about it, posted it, and then just as a piece of news, posted it. The program was able to be downloaded. Other sites were told to get rid of the program. So 2600 posted it more... they had more reason to put it up now than they had before, because people were actually being told to take this program down, and they thought it was absolutely ridiculous. So they had been posed a lawsuit by the MPAA, which has to do with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, for the fact that the code was reverse-engineered... and could be used for pirating. And actually, in fact, 2600 did not reverse engineer any code, and they did not do any pirating. They just posted the program, and they actually had a court case on it. They had lost a court case, and actually they did do an appeal. The depositions from the previous court case and the appeal can all be heard at 2600.com.
And if you can't get to 2600.com, if you're at school or something, just go to VerizonReallySucks.com.
Yeah.
Same website.
Or, no, actually, use that one.
And but the scary thing about the court case was they actually ruled that not only could they not post the code, they couldn't even link to another site that had the code posted. So that was like a really landmark thing. They said they couldn't even link to it, which, like, I believe it was the New York Times posted a story online.
Yeah, they posted a story of actually all the links of where the site is.
Uh-huh. And they even posted the link. So posting a link is a standard technique for linking to it, you know, linking to a site. Yes.
Referencing to some specific article, right?
Yes. So, basically, yeah, to go more in depth, I'd actually fail to explain it just as well as all the information on the site would, but I would definitely go to the site and check it out. Actually, today I was looking on C-SPAN, and they had somebody from FCC. They had people calling up about different things. It was a talk show, and they had somebody there from the FCC, and one lady had called up, and this is to, she was talking about the fact that when she had tapes, she made backup copies of every one of her tapes. And she said she was an avid copier and she liked to copy tapes. And she said she didn't sell the tapes, but she liked to have copies of the tapes. One for, she's a big movie person, I would guess, because she wanted one to save and then one to view to keep the quality of the tape. Well, I don't understand why she'd want to do it with DVDs, but she said that she wanted to keep copying. So with DVDs, she was having a lot of problems with the copying. And she blamed on the FCC that they had made more of a problem, making it harder for people to copy DVDs. Actually, it wasn't the FCC that had made the problem. It was actually Congress who voted on the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. But the point is that a lot of people here and there are getting peeved about the even the problem with the region codes. A lot of engineers are getting really upset as far as trying to... you know, look at the code if they wanted to get their hands on the code, and if it's, since it's available, that would be illegal. If they'd like to figure out the code, that would be illegal. If people would like to make a Linux DVD player, and if it's not licensed, and the person that had created the program with the DECSS, DECSS, which is the decryption algorithm for CSS, those people would be violating the law. So basically, a lot of people really aren't liking the fact that they're being controlled on what they can watch, where they can watch, how they copy it, and stuff like that. So, okay. So that's the short and sweet on that one. You'd have to do some more research. And we could actually spend a whole show on that.
What was the other lawsuit they were involved with this year? I know there was one other one. The 2600 was involved in. It was a completely independent thing. Do you remember what that was?
I know they have a new lawsuit that they have bad cuss word and forward.com. It's actually F4.com. And Ford got pretty upset about that.
Oh, it was I'm thinking of Verizon really sucks. That Verizon was trying to sue them, claiming that was like stealing their domain name, since Verizon is a copyrighted brand name. And that was a big lawsuit. I'm not sure if that's been resolved yet or what the issue was. But
actually, I think I'm not quite sure. I don't know if they went to court. All I know is I'm pretty sure that they did wrap it up and that they are still able to own the domain name.
Yeah, because a domain name isn't a registered trademark or trade name of a company. That's just a domain name. So they should be able to have, you know, whatever name they want.
Exactly, because it expresses, it's a statement expressing an opinion of the company. It's not just, now if it was Verizon.com, legally Verizon would have the right to sue them for that, especially if there was nothing on the site. Like if I go register JoelPeters.com, if you're really famous, and then I just do that and sit there and don't do anything with it so I can sell it, then legally you can sue me for it, because what is the word for that? It's you're just sitting on the page not doing
anything. Cyber-squatting.
Cyber-squatting.
I don't know, to me I don't really understand that, because there's a fine line between, you know, what is registered, you know, what is truly yours, and a domain name is just a name.
What they did a little bit different with the fford.com is that they just point it to Ford's website. It's just a redirect. So if anyone that goes there, it's redirected to Ford's site.
What is forward.com? What kind of website is it?
Forward.com. No. When you go to fford.com, mm-hmm. you are then redirected to ford.com.
That's what I'm saying. What is forward.com?
Ford. Like
Ford. Motor. Auto manufacturing.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Ford. So,
well, get that beeping thing going.
Beep.
I have no idea what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
For effing.
Oh, yeah.
We can actually beep it out.
Hey. All right, well, to move on to
we're
some...
Is that technologically advanced here?
No, we're not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're actually using strings and can to transmit this to the internet.
Hey,
yeah.
It works. Okay, this is a nifty virus that I was reading about. Actually, is this the one that was a part of it? Oh, that's another story. We're going to read about this one, though. The department, State Department site hacked, and the servers were shut down. We're going to read about this. May 11th, 2001, a confidential U.S. State Department website was defaced, and some internal internet servers were shut down by a cyber attack. I like the new words that they come out with. Cyber attack launched earlier this week. The attack was apparently launched Tuesday against a website and servers used by the State Defense Department's Office of International Information Programs, IIP. The IIP frames government policy. Frames government policy for use for 140 foreign governments and media, as well as by residents of those nations. At no time was the classified materials or information sensitive to the conduct of national security in danger, was in danger or compromised, DeLong said, whoever that guy is. We don't believe that there was a political motive. The State Department's main website was not affected. DeLong said that the matter was under investigation, but wouldn't discuss any issue further, they say, with the government agency, which, this is kind of hard to read, discussed the issue further or say which government agency was conducting the investigation, nor would she comment on whether officials believed the attack was done by the State Department, by a State Department employee. Richard Diamond, a spokesman for House Majority Leader Richard Army, R. Texas, he must have been a Republican from Texas, has been an outspoken critic of security and privacy of U.S. government websites. This is the reason, an example of why we have to focus on government security first, because the government systems are vulnerable, Diamond said. The government needs to learn more about how to protect information before it can start telling other people how they should do it. Peter Lindstrom, a senior analyst at Framingham, Massachusetts-based Hurwitz Group Company, disagreed with the assertion that the government sites aren't secure. In general, I think the government does a great job, Lindstrom said. They are a huge target, and these guys walk around with a target on their foreheads. Every once in a while, a stray shot is going to hit them. Nonetheless, Diamond said that the track record for the government agencies has been poor lately. He pointed to a survey by the General Accounting Office that showed GAO operatives. I don't really know who those people are. I tried looking in the article. I couldn't find it. It sounds like their own personal hackers. GAO operatives were able to breach the security of both the Internal Revenue Service and the Veterans Administration and compromise financial records. This is probably the least disturbing of the most recent incidents, Diamond said, of the attack against the State Department. I am more disturbed that the GAO found out that they can access and modify tax records.
Okay. Yeah, here's the thing about hacking government websites. There's such big, lofty words thrown around about hackers doing what they do because they have some big social conscience and they want to help everybody out. But have you ever visited a hacked website? It's pathetic. It's always like some cyber elite code, like half English, half numbers, like somebody giving shout-outs to their buddies and like shout-downs, and you have no idea what they're talking about. It's kind of pathetic, and they act like they do it for some big thing, but obviously it's just for their own personal thrills.
Yeah, most of the time I think it's just done for fun.
Yeah, not always.
Well, unless you're doing hacktivism, which is a whole other term as far as activism using web pages. Hacktivism.
Yeah, if you say so. I don't know. I haven't seen, personally, anything that I would consider actually worthwhile as far as hacking goes. I mean, granted, I've probably only seen a dozen hacked web pages, but maybe there are some out there that actually make an interesting statement. You can tell me if you've ever seen one personally.
Actually, I really haven't, to tell you the truth.
I'm sure maybe probably a few of them exist, but
you know, I think the good ones they keep themselves quiet. Like I think I heard the Loft. Is it Loft?
Yeah.
They were able to hack into I think you know, some you know companies kind of like Cox Communications and their networking. They found out that you could get into pretty much anyone's files, you know, through their network because they just weren't secure. And they called them up. They called the company, kind of like Cox. And
well, that's
said,
different than hacking the web page.
Yeah, well, they hack something, and then they tell them about it, and they don't publicize themselves as doing it. They just want to correct the problem.
Actually, that does remind me. There was one time where I saw a page that was hacked, and actually they put on the page how they hacked it and how to fix it. Actually, they told them that they already fixed it. they patched up the bug.
That's cool.
So
yeah, there is obviously, you know, like even companies that have their internal, if you want to call them hackers, to do just that, just to patch up security bugs, or, you know, network administrators that do that. But I guess what I'm saying would be more specific to web page hacking being pretty stupid. And just, you know, people who go and run scripts, they don't even know what they're doing just to do that as a destructive thing for fun that doesn't necessarily accomplish anything.
Actually, speaking of hacking, there's a new virus that's out. It's actually a worm. It hits 9,000 computers in 48 hours. The quite reliable hacker tracker, attrition.org, was reported as that nearly 9,000 machines have been auto-defaced by the SadMine/IIS, that's Information Systems, that's Microsoft's web server, worm as of Tuesday, making it one of the most effective little scripts ever to get loose on the net. Attrition had posted the IPs of all the boxes known to have been hit, and the mirrored and default defacement to boot. The worm infects Solaris boxes up to version 7 and then scans for IIS machines susceptible to the folder traversal vulnerability and executes mean scripted code on them, replacing the default web pages with naughty words. What's ironic here is that the worm exploits two separate holes, which are reported and patched and had patches ages ago. Call it proof of concept that sysadmins spend an awful lot of time on activities other than absorbing security bulletins. The worm's payload is non-destructive, far more nuisance than a threat. However, developing and destructive versions wouldn't be close to brain surgery. So let's get those patches installed, shall we?
Let's do it, people. Did they catch the guy who made this?
No.
How hard is it to make a virus? Did anybody do it? Does it take a lot of technical skill?
I think it takes testing the operating systems that you're, you know, trying to hack, because they have problems and, you know, little glitches that you can work with. You know, if all the operating systems ran idealistically, you know, perfectly, you know, then who could hack? Who could make a virus? So, you know, there has to be some problem, some bug, so you have to know the operating system.
Truthfully, most viruses require little to intermediate programming knowledge, and that's about it. There's actually a lot of information on that. And most viruses, one guy can write the virus, but it takes the one person to take that guy's writing and do some modifications to it. And now you've got 10 variations of the same virus.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And actually, there was a security bulletin about IIS, which allows you to log into IIS and issue commands on the server file side. And I think that might have been the bug that they used in this instance. Actually, at first I got that. I patched that up on my Microsoft box, so we won't be having that problem on my server.
Now, you never hear about viruses on Linux machines. Is that because they're not as predominant as Microsoft, or is that just because they're more well-made, or the operating system is more, doesn't have as many holes?
Personally, my opinion is that Microsoft, it's a lot different, because everyone's got their own Linux box configured their own way. But in Microsoft, there's a lot of consistencies, so that actually helps you work with those consistencies and able to develop a cleaner virus that's going to work much easier, because you know what you're attacking, you know how it works, you know its flaws, you know that it's most likely going to have that software installed. And a lot of people use Windows. With Linux, okay, if your Linux box is insecure, basically they can take your operating system and rip it apart, because if you can get inside a Linux box and if you're able to compile code and this is just one way of doing things, you can wreak a lot of damage on a Linux box. To me, a secure Linux box, it's almost not impossible, but it's really hard to hack a very secure Linux box. For Windows, typically there is a lot of glitches, and there is things that don't get patched, despite, you know, people being warned. Linux actually, I think, has quicker bug fixes. It has a more knowledgeable crowd of admins, I think. On the admin side, finding these bugs and reporting these bugs and getting them fixed. I don't know. It's just with Microsoft, it's a number of things, but I think there's more Microsoft code, basically, because it's more consistent. You think they have Outlook. You think they have this software installed that they usually do, and they can typically launch that that virus.
Yeah, because you can assume one virus can work on every machine or nearly every machine. Like, you can't do that with Linux because it varies from, you know, computer to computer.
Like, for instance, Outlook is usually used, Outlook or Outlook Express, it's usually used as a mail client, and that's a great way to submit your viruses, because how are you going to get in that system other than hacking and brute forcing the password or trying to use some other service to get an FTP, Telnet, and that's one thing about, see, if you Telnet into a Microsoft box, you don't get a lot of functionality. If you Telnet to a Linux box and you're able to get in, you can pull off some more commands. That's where the secure Linux box is actually really secure, but if it's not secure, there's a lot of root scripts to install it. But, yeah, if they have, they typically have Outlook Express or Outlook, but you don't know, for Linux, somebody might be using, there's about 20 different mail clients, so you don't know what they're going to be using as far as their email and how things can be executed. And the great thing for virus writers for Windows machines is the Visual Basic scripts and macros, which allow you to, you know, run a lot of things pretty easily. And you get a lot of Windows users, and, you know, average Windows user isn't too virus savvy, nor do they care. And that's why there's a lot of other viruses for Windows users, because, frankly, a lot of Windows users are pretty non-knowledgeable about those things, and they're willing to start those programs and get themselves infected.
Well, it kind of seems like that you need a little bit, you know, in the natural world that we talk about biodiversity, but it seems that viruses are taking advantage of our, you know, monodiversity in computers.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, it's essentially a type of exploitation on, like, the same ways of doing things in computers as, like, natural viruses do in the real world. It's exploiting a pathway, like the mail clients, and taking over and trying to weed out the norm to essentially proliferate more diverse ways of doing things and nurture evolution in a technological sense.
That's a good point. I mean, everybody knows diversity is necessary to survive in the natural world. You know, if your entire population is identical and you're in one environment, one storm, one fluctuation in temperature can come in and wipe you out. So why not the same thing for computers? Everybody has the same mail client. A hacker's going to know exactly what virus to write to infect everybody. And then, like that, you're gone. So.
And that's one of, like, the problems that we're having with our, you know, biogenetically engineered crops, is they're all essentially clones of each other. So that one new disease can wipe out whole areas of crops.
Not to mention the fact that no one's ever done a field study to know if they have effects that will come out 30 years from now, and by then it will be too late because we've been eating them for 30 years.
There's another thing to add that there's, and I forget what type of fish it is, that's actually bioengineered. They made a copy of this one fish, and what they do is they make it grow three times as fast, so they're able to sell the fish and use it as meat, food, for us. But one of their main worries was actually getting one of these fish out in the wild. Since they're three times larger, the females would tend to want to mate with them. And actually, through a period of time, all the natural fish would be gone, and these bioengineered fish would be it. And the scary thing is that they have these pins that are actually just kind of, not a net, but, I don't know, a material that holds these fish in these little tanks. It's more material, not like a cement wall, actually on a riverbed. And if one of these guys got out, the females would like to mate with that fish. And typically, the original species would end up dying off, and then these new mutated fish would actually be born of the sperm of the already changed fish. So that's a whole,
yeah, just like sort of like Jurassic Park, I guess. A lot of these new agricultural technologies, they're more worried about if they can do it. They don't worry about if they should. They just apply them. I mean, there's, you know, cases of engineered corn making it to market before they figured out that a lot of people were, like, allergic to it, like, serious reactions to it, and they had to pull that, and I'm guessing that's not the last bad reaction we'll see.
Then there's other things, like, I forget what strain of corn it was, but it was the pollen from the corn was actually killing monarch butterfly larvae, that the pollen would blow onto the grass that lives on like the sides of the field, and that's where the monarch butterfly larvae grow, and it actually made them extremely lethargic and killed off most of them. You know, there are more repercussions than just what affects us. There's, you know, many pathways for everything.
Ripple effect, right?
Yeah, I have this whole psychology that maybe a way of living that I follow is that the more that you stray from the natural, the more problems you will create.
Well, I think in the last show we talked about the Amish and their philosophy.
Exactly. I have this firm belief that everywhere is a balance, and it fluctuates, but every time you step so far in one direction, it creates a much wider scope of everything in the reverse direction from the repercussions of everything that you're doing. And since we're stepping so far into these extremist ways of doing things, much, much further than humanity's ever gone before, and some people are doing it quite blindly, or they're doing it just for money, and we're not really watching what the effects are, nor are the people that they're doing it sometimes even care.
Well, the problem is that a lot of people who are making these decisions are doing it for short-term profits, looking at the short-term consequences, not to mention the people in Congress or the president or the heads of industry that largely control our national laws and such. But when you have people only worrying about that, not worrying what's going to happen a few generations from now, which clearly, you know, the planet has changed. You know, it's been demonstrated, hasn't it, that the temperature has actually risen a few degrees, like, within our lifetimes.
Yeah.
So that in a few centuries from now, like, we're not talking about some small thing, but serious alterations of the Earth's, you know, biology and ecosystem, that if a corporation is looking to make a profit for its shareholders this year, and they're not thinking about that, if that's the way our world is run, then, you know, technology is going to come back to us again in the end. There's going to be repercussions, as VR said.
If this is the first time you're listening to In the Now, just want to explain. We talk about a lot of different things here, things that are in the now. Most of the things we talk about that are going on in the world, because a lot of it is going on in the world. We talk about technology, we talk about politics, we talk about pretty much anything that's affecting us now, and we tend to like to talk about the positive side of things, and we also like to bring up the negative side, and hopefully this show will be used as a forum to share ideas and share news, but also make you wake up and think about what's going on and the setbacks of things that they could provide. It's a healthy thinking process. It's something that everyone should do. Always kind of question things in your life and question what's going on. We'll talk about a lot of things in the show with technology, as far as the new things with, you know, being on the internet and all the new features of, palm devices, your PDA devices, incorporating internet into your appliances and your automobiles. It's something that, you know, it seems like a nice feature, but you always need to question how it can be abused and how it can be misused.
Well, we talked about space elevators earlier, and we talked about, the ecosystem changing. Are we all going to die? My question is, how far do you guys think technology will get before mankind is either, you know, destroyed or the second coming or what have you? Like, will we create computers that simulate the human brain? Will we make it to other planets? Will we make it out of the galaxy? What do you guys think?
See, I don't know, because I think that Earth has a way of getting rid of something that's causing problems before it gets out of hand. So, you know, if we're causing a major, you know, like disruption, then sort of like the harmony of just, you know, the Earth, Mother Earth, then it's going to destroy us. You know, it'll get rid of those problems.
Well, the Mayans have a thing that their calendar, it will end here at about December 21st, 2012.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that.
Yeah, and their whole thing is at that time that Mother Nature goes, you know, it's time to reconstitute balance, and everything that we do not give thanks for will turn upon us. Like, our domesticated animals will, like, rage upon us, or power grid will shut down, and all these things. But there's always a few...
Rolling blackouts.
There's only a few creatures that that are left to tell the next ones, you know, to remember to give thanks for what we do. And I think give thanks is a little more than just saying thank you when you receive a gift, but also see the repercussions of that now, like that gift, you know, creates a bond that if reciprocity, I think the word is.
Reciprocity?
Reciprocity, thank you. And that it creates an imbalance. That yes, there's a physical gift exchange, but there is also an intangible one given back that we don't look at very often.
I firmly believe that.
Yeah. So do you think, Slip, that we'll ever make it to other planets?
Here's a couple things that are going on. If you got the dough, you can now, not through the United States, but through Germany, they'll take you.
Russia, I think?
Russia. They'll take you in space.
They're a little bit more capitalist than we are now.
So they need the money a little more.
Yeah. hopefully they spend it right. So they have that. I firmly believe that before I die, we will definitely have made it to Mars with a human being and have it just as researched as we do the moon. I believe that will happen before my death.
Assuming you live for a while.
Yeah, assuming I don't. Yeah, that's right. I think that it'll go pretty far. If you look at as far as technology getting completely amazing, if you look at it right now, I personally think if you look at how well nature works with itself and you compare how well that system works, if you look at technology, it's actually really crappy. It doesn't work very well. It always breaks. They hire guys like me to come in and fix it all day long. Technology really isn't the greatest, and it really isn't working as smoothly as people think. All those dreams of e-commerce and your website connecting with people.
Solutions.
It doesn't work that well because you have to hire a guy for about $100,000 to keep that website going, as long as another guy for another $100,000 to make that website and maintaining it. And it's really a cumbersome process. I really don't think technology is very close to being a very working, well-working system.
Because it's evolving so rapidly. I mean, my whole theory is that a few thousand years ago, you know, the printing press comes out. That's an exciting thing. Everybody hears about it. It's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Today, it's moving so fast. There's things you don't hear about until years after they happen. Like, oh, yeah, cloning happened. I mean, and we just roll right by that because there's so many major things happening all the time. There's major things you don't even hear about when, you know, centuries ago, you heard about every little thing because it was still accelerating, like, so much slower than it is today. So maybe we're going so fast that we can't even keep up with ourselves to keep it operating at peak efficiency.
What? I know we're actually developing really quickly because basically, as far as just in the technology world, we're developing really quickly because we've laid the last 50 years the ground tools for technology, and now we're just exploiting or, you know, divulging in the tools that are already created, and now we've got these side processes that are being created all the time, and I think that's mostly what's keeping the economy busy is all these side things. Oh, what if I make this? What if I just add that button to that? What if I do that? And a lot of them have features for a lot of different people. So you're like, you know, I know someone's going to like this, someone's going to like that. So I think that's why the economy's getting so roared up. But
Weren't you, or was it you, Dimitri, who was telling me that a lot of the internet technologies were actually fueled by people who wanted pornography, like as in webcams at home and stuff?
Go ahead, Dimitri.
Oh, isn't it? Go ahead.
Basically, about 5 years ago, I'd say about 6 years ago, around the time of like just when the Pentiums were coming out, you were lucky if you had sound. Okay, you were lucky if you had video. You were lucky if you got an internet. You were lucky if you saw past 640 by 480 with 256 colors. Now the reason why people bought sound cards, bought the video cards, bought the modems, was for video games. And that was the whole reason. Unless you were doing some video editing or if you're, you know, at a company that actually used them like that. And typically they didn't even use Windows machines. They're using SDI machines and they still do to this day. There was actually video games that fueled that and actually fueled the processors to bump up because basically they were just using office applications which didn't need very much computational power. And then from there, nowadays you have pretty much everything you want.
I believe the expression is man uses his greatest technology to amuse himself.
Yeah.
And it seems to be true.
So that's why a lot of that was created, was just a lot of it is from video games. And now as far as the internet, porn stuff, okay, you needed websites that were capable of holding a lot of pages, a lot of pictures. If you're going to do live video, doing video over the internet. There's also interest of doing video for people to view themselves over the internet, but the video was also majorly pushed by the porn industry because they knew if they could just get this video on, they would make a lot of money. And they'd make a lot of money more than the people that were using it just to see their relatives and say hello.
Yeah, because who really wants to spend that kind of money to talk to their relatives?
Yeah, it would actually just be like a side option, like a browser. Who wants to buy a browser? No one buys a browser. That's why it's free. Mm-hmm. Actually, speaking of browsers, nobody download Internet Explorer 6.0. Right now it's in the beta version. When it comes out, it has a feature on there that so sickens me. I am so unhappy with it. What the feature is if you click on a file, let's just say it's a RealPlayer Media file. If you click on that file and you have RealPlayer installed, it will take RealPlayer, open it up, put that program behind the browser, put a box in front of the browser that asks you if you'd like to download Windows Media Player. It's the same thing for every piece of software that they have that you would need a plug-in for.
It's like the old shareware trick. Would you like to register this program now? Yes. Ask me later. And it's like, where's the screw you, get away from me button?
Yeah. And I... You know, that's just another Microsoft stink that I have that just really, really annoys me.
They're in it for marketing, you know. They're not in it for quality.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. That's I use Windows machines, but actually right now I'm all Linux-based. I've got everything set up in Linux. So I don't need to leave it.
You could always use Netscape.
Or Mozilla. Actually, Mozilla 0.9 came out, and it actually rocks. It's a lot better than Netscape, I think.
Hey, how does Netscape make any money?
Advertisement. They make it off their website. It's the way I look at it. Just like Yahoo. Yahoo has they've got the banners, and they also have a lot of other little features that they put on there, like Yahoo email too. I don't know if Yahoo email uses something as far as sending their list off to somebody to spam them, or what. But there's news. Actually, don't make any money off news. Products. They have, you know, like Yahoo. You can go shop at Yahoo.com. Stuff like that. They get a little money from that. But I think most of it's advertisement. And speaking of browsers, here's another story coming from the CDC. Actually, it's not from the CDC, but it's about the CDC, which is Cult of the Dead Cow. They're a hacking group. They're actually not a... they're kind of a cult. They're pretty out there.
They call themselves an occult?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
So move for them.
Yeah. It's not like a Charles Manson or a move. Like, you know.
Well, because move backwards is ohm.
Which is the
Oh, yes, this is a great time for the Mad Cow Theory, isn't it?
Yeah, well, let me talk about this, okay. And we'll break out the Mad Cow. Okay, just a brief intro. CDC's been around since 1984. They're a hacking group. They've released, they're the ones that developed the first e-zine, which is a text magazine that they did on the internet a long time ago. I think they're up to like 300-some files. They came out with the program BackOrifice, which is actually an administration tool and can be used as a hacking tool. Okay, CDC is releasing a new peek-a-booty software in July, which will defeat totalitarian governments and law enforcement from their current monitoring efforts. A web browser that claims it will make it easier for people to circumvent censorship and avoid the attention of law enforcers. It uses a combination of encryption and a GNUtella peer-to-peer networking scheme to avoid any limits corporations or governments are trying to place on anyone using the web. It has no central server, and instead it uses all the machines in the system to hold data. I'm not quite sure what that means. The inventors of the new browser said that they were developing it for people who lived under restrictive regimes and who wanted to see information they were otherwise denied. Many governments include those of China, Malaysia, and Singapore, and many Arabic countries restrict what citizens are allowed to view, fearing the access for subversive pornographic or political information that will cause social unrest. Documents or files. Let's see. Oh, actually, I skipped something there. Documents or files that can put on the network. When the files. Okay, let me go back real quick. I actually skipped the page. Members of the Peekabooty network can ask the particular Actually, huh. One second here. Let me fix this. Okay, this is more a description of what the program does. Let's see. When the files appear, this is like files if you're grabbing them, the Peekabooty system will package them up, encrypt them, and then ship them back to the machine requesting them. The Cult of Dead Cow styles itself as a group of ethical hackers that use creative technology to defeat attempts to restrict the spread of information or embarrass companies with shoddy security. If Peekabooty is used by large numbers of people, its use of encryption could make a mockery of the police attempts to monitor electronic communications. This is a quick story about some of the stuff that other governments are doing as far as monitoring those communications. In the UK, the controversial regulation of the Investigatory Powers Act call for the placing of black boxes inside Britain's internet connection companies so law enforcement agencies can easily dip into and tap data streams. Civil cyber liberty groups such as the Foundation for Information Policy Research have drawn attention to the shortcomings of this approach and show how easy it is to circumvent this tapping. In the past, the CDC has won notoriety for its development of BackOrifice and BackOrifice 2000 software tools. The programs were distinguished to show the security failings of Microsoft products and can be used to remotely hijack a computer. The Peekabooty software is due to be unveiled at this year's DEF CON Hacker Conference being held in Las Vegas in July.
Here's the thing, okay? First Amendment good, censorship bad, you know. I'm all for that, but anywhere, even in America, we place limits on what people can post or view on the internet. Like, you can't post or view child pornography, you can't post copyright material. Why is it our responsibility to go tell them they can't have their own moral code? If in a Muslim country it's illegal to view pornography, why does that make them totalitarian, where we can't view child pornography here? Why should we enforce our morality on them by giving them that program?
Well, that's because we're so egocentric that we think our values are universal. That there isn't cultural differences between right and wrong.
Basically, the only purpose of that program is to not be censored and have that option if you choose.
Well, that's my point. There's censorship here. Like, you can't post a threat to somebody's life, but we're trying to change theirs to fit our standards. What makes that valid? Like Brian said, I would view it the same way.
Where did you see that? I haven't seen it.
Seeing what that
as far as telling them what they can host on their internet, as far as
no, I'm saying, those governments, China, you know, Muslim countries, they're saying, okay, you guys cannot view pornography. That's against our culture, cultural values. It's against our religion. That's illegal in this country. You can't do that. And we're trying to, you know, CDC is saying, obviously, this government is a totalitarian regime who has no respect for its citizens. So we're giving them this software that'll allow them to do it. But I'm saying, that's a good idea. If it's really a totalitarian regime, but is it right to allow them to view pornography or whatever the case may be? If their government doesn't allow it, maybe they have good reasons. Maybe they're right that should not be viewed, and we're wrong.
But I think the answer is very simple, is that as a human being, if you want to look at porn, they're giving you an option to look at it. If you want to go to USA websites, and you're not allowed to go to USA websites, if you want to go to USA websites, now they've given you the option to go to the USA website.
What if you want to look at child pornography? Do you have the right to do that?
Yeah, I think with their program, yes, you do.
Yeah, but that's a deeper story. That's another question as far as if child pornography should be put on the net. That's a different question.
I think it's the same question.
See, there's no global morale. There's no morality that's global. Everyone's got their own view of what's right and wrong.
Exactly, and what this does is when somebody limits you, it says, no, I'm not limited.
So, you know, there really is, there's a standard, you know, of what things that are right or wrong, but people believe whatever they want to believe. We can't say, hey, you know, you have to believe what we believe.
It goes the same thing. It says if one government says you cannot have guns, but everyone says we want to have guns, so we get guns somehow. So,
okay, I'm saying, is it really on us to enforce that in their countries? Yeah, the prime directive.
I don't think that they're enforcing that at all. I think that they just presented an option. You know what I mean?
Somebody got it.
What I'm saying is you make it sound like the CDC says, man, I'm going to go into their government and give them this software so they can view other sites because their government's wrong. I don't feel that's what they're doing at all. I feel that they're saying, if you want a more secure browser, because this is also for Americans, if you want a secure browser, if you want a browser that tracks you less, if you want a browser that takes your cookies and trashes them and returns fake information back other than the ones that you're putting in there, if that's what the software does, this is more of an anonymous browser. It's more of a secure browser. It leaves less of a trace and doesn't restrict you. So it's actually a browser in the truest sense without people putting on their restrictions.
Yeah, it's actually...
Hopefully they write it that well.
It's allowing people to actually have no bounds except for what is, you know, what is actually available on the Internet.
Complete the anonymity.
Yeah.
There is a supply, and you have access completely to what is already there.
Exactly.
And it's actually would be like the moral code of the Internet.
As far as child pornography, I think that's a different subject as well, because I think some things shouldn't exist, in my opinion, shouldn't exist, period. And I think a majority of people would vote that child pornography shouldn't exist in any form, whether it be a magazine, whether it be on the Internet, anywhere. So that's a different subject as far as, you know, what we don't want in society, period, as far as that. People want Internet in their society, but they don't want child pornography. But what this is offering is just a browser that allows you to be a little bit freer from all the things that people have been adding to the Internet when, after it's been a free Internet. Now they've added all these extra gadgets to it, and it's, you know.
I see a lot of glitches or problems with that software. If you have this anonymous user, a whole bunch of people using some browser that, you know, that can't be traced, can't be tracked, that's going to be used for something totally different than the original purpose.
That's right. Yeah, don't get me... I mean, to be cliche, I guess we have to agree to disagree, because I completely agree as far as the web is over-commercialized to a nauseating extent, but, yeah, I mean, this could be used for whatever people want to use it for, which...
And,
yeah.
Well, and that's just with the most simple tool as well, can be either way. Like, a knife can either save your life or take it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like Social Security. It's actually supposed to be a good thing, but now it's used to track us, and about every worst thing you can apply to it's been applied.
Good example.
So,
I think it was the act of, like, 1938, the Social Security Act, that said that the only use for the Social Security number is for the payment and distribution of Social Security money, but yet it's everywhere. It's I know mine is, like, on, like, 5,000 different databases.
I've harangued on this constantly. Isn't it? My understanding was that it was illegal, or companies did not have the right to ask you for it for any purpose other than, like you said, specifically your Social Security benefits. So, yeah, on forms, it's, you know, constantly
mandatory.
People are requiring that. And that is so not what the Act was intended for. Or, you know, they used that completely. For years, Congress was trying to pass, like, a universal ID, and they wouldn't let them. And then they got around it that way, which is...
Well, go check get an application from Taco Bell. I believe that's one of the only companies that doesn't have a spot for it.
All right. Well, yeah, that's, you know, it's another thing, too, that I've been really peeved about is actually if you call up any technology vendor, as soon as they can answer any question, they want to know your whole life to put in their database. For what? If you just want to call a question and answer it, and that's it, they will not let you. I cannot get them to answer my questions. So, sir, we have to put you in the database. Sir, we have to put you in the database. Said, you're never going to talk to me again. I'm just asking you a question. I'm out of your life. I actually one time I said, can I just give you bogus information? Is that fine? And he said, no, I'm going to need your real stuff. I get bogus stuff anyway. So.
You tell him the story of your calling the support line, and you mentioned that you happen to be running Linux, too, and they tried to blame all the problems of your computer on that.
Oh, jeez. Okay, that's a quick story here. I won't say their name, I guess. But I bought a computer, and I wanted some tech support because my DVD-ROM wasn't working. And it was a dual boot system. It still is a dual boot system from Windows and Linux. So I put Linux on it, and my DVD-ROM was not working. I went through about every fix that they had on the phone, and they couldn't fix it. I already pretty much figured that it was a broken DVD-ROM. And I'm a tech guy myself, so I'm discussing everything that's going on, and, you know, here's what's on my system, and I know this isn't causing it, and I've got Linux on my system, and it doesn't work in there either, so I don't think it's the Windows software. Oh, so you have Linux on your system? And I said, yeah, I have Linux on my system. He said, well, we cannot support you since you have Linux on your system. I said, well, it has nothing to do with Linux, and you know, I understand if you put on this crazy jazz on your computer, you know, it can cause problems somewhere else. But I said, this obviously is not a Linux problem. It has nothing to do with Linux. When I'm in Windows, I can have anything else on my hard drive installed on different partitions, but it does not run in Windows and has no effect in Windows unless there was a problem with my hard drive acting up. That's a different story. So I completely got unsupported. They got off the phone with me, wouldn't help me out. I call up again to try to get another tech guy. As soon as I started talking to him about my problem, they were reading in my history that they write on the history. Said, so I'm talking about the problem. He's like, yeah, can you go through this? And, oh, wait. It shows here, you have Linux on your system? And I said, yeah, I've got Linux on my system. He said, oh, well, we can't support you. And I said, well, why can't you support me? He said, well, because that's not the factory settings. So I said, so you believe that when people buy their computers, that they're not going to add more to it? And from that point on, the service contract I paid for will not and no longer work? And he said, that's pretty much it. And I said, oh, well, that's a bunch of crap. So I got off the phone and I called somebody else back up. And he actually got on my case about that. And he got actually really upset, the fact that I had Linux on that machine. It made it sound like if I didn't submit to the Microsoft Borg and their whole system of fixing things, that they wouldn't answer my questions. But I paid for them to answer my questions.
I think the word of a friend sums it up. I was showing him how to change a particular Windows setting, and I showed it to him, and he said, am I allowed to do that? He actually said that as if it was some standard thing, nothing to do with hacking or anything, some standard Windows interface, as if he was under the impression that he could only change certain things instead of what is accurate. This is a product that he bought for his own use. He could use it as a table if he wanted to. He could use it anything he wants to do with it.
Exactly.
It's his right. And it's just funny because that seems to be the mindset of millions of people just slowly heading in that direction, slippery slope or whatever you want to call
it. Yeah, exactly. Just like the DVDs. I bought a DVD, I bought a player. But if I buy a DVD in Germany, I can't play it on my player. But I paid for the software. I paid for the video, and I paid for the player. So it's the control, and it's
Actually, you bought the ones and zeros in a very particular order.
Yeah.
And that's it. So once you try to rearrange those, then you're screwing with everything.
And even if you're doing it for non-malicious purposes, you can go to jail. You can find a lot of things aren't good about that. Here's another real
damn the man.
Sometimes, yes. This is actually kind of interesting. An article in Wired in 1997 about 205 laptops that have disappeared from the British Defense Ministry with mostly had classified info on it. And this is kind of a thought that they had put in this article, that maybe vigilante justice in the future will consist of low-jack laptops allowed to be stolen with the semantic inside blow up via, you know, you said a bunch of junk as far as stats, but basically it's a laptop that blows up or disables the hard drive. Or if it gets stolen, your LoJack will find it. Or let's just say you forgot your login password and LoJack will log you in.
or blow you up from your own laptop.
Yeah, or blow you up from your own laptop. Whoops, our
laptop gun, baby.
Yeah, we were doing some training and our trainer accidentally blew somebody up, but it won't happen again, we promise.
You have three chances to log in.
Because he's dead.
You have 2 minutes to log in, so it's high pressure after that.
But the
laptop will self-destruct.
And here's actually another thing that I was reading about that's pretty interesting, that NASA had developed, and they're looking for people to develop along with them. It's actually called, it's morphing materials. And what it is, let me read a brief snippet, is, scientists are developing smart wing materials. Now, this stuff actually applies to a lot of other things, not just wings, that can bend on command, closely imitating a bird's wings during flight. The piezoelectric sensors that allow an aircraft to feel the motion of its wings just like birds do, so it can adjust to different conditions. Further research might see personal aircraft with self-healing materials, NASA says. It sounds deeper than it is. I'll explain in a second. And the air cars that hover fly backwards, upside down, just like bugs can. NASA being NASA, many of the other potential applications are military. There's a vision for fighter bombers that can instantly morph into an agile, high-speed jets, and also talk of fleets of aircraft without pilots. More information can also be found on NASA's site, which is, actually the one site is www.ntc.edu/morphing/techover.html. Now, this article actually really goes way into the dream effect of what could happen with this. Basically, to be non-technical, and I really don't know all the technical stuff about it, is actually, it looks like a thin sheet of material. And when electricity is applied to it in certain ways, it causes bending. So if you have four corners, maybe you can make one corner bend. You can make two corners bend, all four corners bend. And there's a way of metering that is when that material, when that electricity is applied to make the material bend, there's a reverse effect, and that can be metered to how far it's bending. And using a computer program, you can make it bend in certain ways that you'd like. So if you put a material around that, and it would, this material that causes the bending effect could warp the outside material as far as the way a body looks. They said wings flapping, they could make it that material flap up and down by applying a current in one way and then reversing in another.
I think it would be really, it's kind of like how your turn signals work, is that there's it's a little piece of wire that when electricity runs through it, it heats up, and so it actually curves or expands. And so this is a little bit more complex way of going about it that doesn't actually take heat. Well, it would, because that's essentially what electrons would do to it, but it's taking that same very simple concept and expanding it to actually be really meaningful.
I'm thinking life-size transformers as far as applications go.
But one thing is that if you think it's really limited, if you take four corners of a box, because the only way I can see it is if they use something that's four corners like a square, you think, wow, you can only bend it in four ways. But if you take that and you shrink it down, let's just say you had something that's 10 feet by 10 feet, but you put in 1,000 squares, and all those squares have their own ways of bending, now you have something that's kind of like what 3D models say as NURBS, which is a system that allows you to edit and manipulate 3D models, and basically they're patches that are able to flex and bend in certain ways, and you can actually sculpt things out of it. So you could apply that effect to these objects. I don't know what material they'd wrap it around, a type of material that'd be able to flex, have some stability and not breaking. But
polymers. Good carbon fibers. They're going to be our friends in the future.
We're getting too complex. We need some simplicity here.
Well, everything that we're doing, if you look at everything that we're doing that's complex, it's actually it's for a simplistic need.
Yeah, but we don't do it that way. Like, the whole, just like a computer, is to log, to do, like, just a memo on my computer is 10 times the process that I would be writing it.
Yeah. Of course, you don't have to do that process, but yeah.
Well, that's what tech is. Tech is process, and ology is the study of. So what we're all using is actually just tech and creating more tech and process upon process.
Okay, we're getting we're criticizing every process here. We need at least one technological advance that we can all agree is good. Anybody think of one?
I think the internet's a good thing.
I'm pretty fond of the toaster myself.
I really like the portable fire.
that's a good one.
Portable fire.
Well, I don't think we're ripping on everything. We're just kind of tonight we're discussing
pluses and minuses.
Yeah, pluses and minuses. So, once again, that will be another edition of In the Now. Come visit us next month. Let me check out and see what the date will be that we're playing next month.
I'm JP. Thank you for listening.
It's going to be June the 8th. Be here next month, June the 8th, live at 5 p.m. So this is Slipmode signing off.
This is Dmitry. Good night.
This is VR saying, remember to ask what color your day is.
All right. And that is In the Now. Have a good night.
I almost forgot my name. Like, my name is...
By the way, Demetrius always forgets his name.